Is Donald Trump now a convicted felon since a jury has found him guilty in the hush money trial? And was this trial a politically motivated trial that now shows us how all of our rights can be taken if they just don't like you? Now, this is something I want to address, but look now here at how Democrats are using this conviction to their advantage. This is J.B. Pritzker, the governor of Illinois, speaking about this recently.
Donald Trump is a convicted felon, an adjudicated rapist, and a congenital liar. He's a racist, sexist, misogynistic narcissist who wants to use the levers of power to enrich himself and punish anyone who dares speak a word against him. He has stolen state secrets, compromised our national security, betrayed our Constitution, and sacrificed the truth to further his own naked ambition. When Trump comes to Milwaukee for the Republican convention, he'll cast blame on others for his own misdeeds. He'll claim credit for things that he never touched. He'll lie and he'll ramble.
Okay, now he's lying, actually. You don't have to like Donald Trump to like truth and the Constitution and the law. That's what we're gonna do right now. We're gonna put aside what we like. It doesn't matter what we like. Let's talk about what's true. In fact, Donald Trump was not convicted of rape. He was found guilty of sexual abuse and defamation in the E. Jean Carroll case. He is not a convicted felon because a jury verdict does not, in fact, make one a convicted felon. The judge actually has to enter that judgment of guilt, and that has yet to happen. So why are so many people running their mouth about this case that they want it to be true? Because they don't like Trump. And they want that hatred validated. But this has to, we all have to collectively, there's about 40,000 of us watching across platforms. We have to set aside what we like at this point and decide, do we have a law and a constitution? Is it being violated? And is there principles to stand up for? Now, last week, a Yale professor went viral for his assessment of the hush money case against the former president. And in response to this verdict, this is law professor and constitutional scholar and lawyer Jed Rubenfeld. And he launched this YouTube channel called Straight Down the Middle. It's also a Twitter account. And it's proof, I think, that there are still adults in the room. Now, I have a suspicion that even though this was covered in the New York Post and the Wall Street Journal, I saw it everywhere, but it still has relatively modest amount of view counts, and I think that YouTube is suppressing this. So I would like to elevate this content because I think it's so brilliant. I think maybe it's a little too smart for CNN, but we are not here. So let's go over it because I highly suggest you watch it for yourself. I don't presume to do it justice, but we're going to try because there's a lot of things we can learn here. He makes a very strong case that this is a political trial and the president's rights were violated. What he says here, so let's go through his finer points, is that President Trump was charged with falsification of business records, which was then used to conceal a crime. The problem with that is that the crime was not specified to Trump's legal team, and then the jury never had to agree to that crime. Even when the judge was asked to force them, the prosecution, to commit to the crime, they didn't, and this is a serious violation of President Trump and all of our Sixth Amendment rights.
Trump was not charged only with falsification of a business record. He was charged with falsifying a business record to conceal a second crime that he'd already committed. That's how the charges become felony charges. And if you're wondering, it's because he spaced out the payments over 12 months, generating like three business records each time, almost three. You get to 34 counts of false business records. You may have read there are 34 counts. That's the 34 counts. But then the question is, what second crime is the state saying that he was trying to conceal through these allegedly false business records? So it's a two-step crime, falsifying business records in order to conceal a second crime that he'd already committed. So what was the second crime? Well, that's where things get tricky, because the indictment didn't say. The indictment said that he falsified business records to conceal a second crime, but it never said what the second crime was. And to this day, a lot of people are unsure what the jury thought, because what the state did was it did not commit itself to what the second crime might be. In its papers before trial, the state said, look, we got a bunch of different theories.
Okay, theories. So let's selfishly think about this for a second. Do you want to live in a country where the state can have a theory about how they want to go after you but not commit to it? That should terrify you. Professor Rubenfeld says that this is possibly, again, a serious violation of your Sixth Amendment right to a fair trial.
Where an indictment charges a crime that depends in turn on violation of another statute, the indictment must identify the underlying offense. Well, that's exactly what this indictment did. Charged a crime that depended in turn on the violation of another statute, but it didn't specify or identify the underlying offense. Now, there's a very good argument that that indictment was in violation of federal constitutional law.
Okay, if you want to defend yourself, if you are ever found that you've done something the government doesn't like, you have to know what you're defending yourself against, because the state did not commit to the crime which they were asserting. The Trump legal team was shadowboxing. He says here that the Trump team actually tried to get the state to commit to the crime that they were alleging, and the judge denied that. They used what's called a bill of particulars, and the Trump team did file that, saying, tell us the crime that we're fighting here, that we're going to argue against. And the judge ruled, no, they don't have to give you that. No, it's not important. So the judge decided the defendant did not have to know what he was being accused of. Again, if it can happen to Trump, it can happen to all of us. This should scare you.
Well, is that constitutional? I think there's a very serious question about whether that was all constitutional. Because you see, the Sixth Amendment requirement that the defendant be informed of the charges against him, that's not a mere technicality. It's actually like the fundamental principle of constitutional criminal procedure. If you're charged with a crime, if you're being prosecuted by the government, you have a right to know what it is they're charging you with, because we're not supposed to have a legal system like Franz Kafka's legal system in The Trial, where the protagonist is put through a trial and found guilty and never told what it is he's been charged with. It's a very serious matter to not tell the defendant exactly what charges he's up against. And that's why the Second Circuit held what it did in that Pirro case, because the defendant has a right to know, to prepare his defense, to know what the crimes that the state is going to put before the jury might be, so he can call the right witnesses and be ready to defend himself. And because the state was playing hide the ball on this and changing its theories and keeping its theories open right through the whole trial, I think there's a very serious potential Sixth Amendment violation that happened in this case.
Now, in fact, it wasn't until the day before the trial that the prosecution landed on a crime. And that one is also problematic. And then, according to Professor Rubenfeld, because the jury did not even have to agree on which crime they were convicting him of hiding.
During the trial, the prosecution kind of narrowed it down to one of those three crimes. And the one it chose was the New York election law violation. But there, the problem was that, as I just said, that was another two-step crime where they had to come in and show that he was trying to influence an election through the violation of some other statute. And they never said exactly which other statute that was going to be. And to this day, we do not know what the jury was thinking when it convicted him. You can ask a jury for a special verdict and make the jury say exactly what offense the jury believes the defendant to have committed. But the judge did not order a special verdict in this case. The judge ordered what's called a general verdict. And on top of that, the judge told the jury, you know, when it comes to that election law offense with its second crime, you don't have to be unanimous about that. Two of you could think that Trump was trying to influence an election through a tax violation. Two of you could think that Trump was trying to influence an election by falsifying other records. And a bunch of other people on the jury could think there was some other violation. And the judge said, you don't have to be unanimous about that.
Okay. Now, he lays out the fact that the Constitution does require a unanimous jury. So was the judge's instruction a violation? He says, actually, he makes the case in the video he does today, and that's a little bit legally. So we'll leave that one, and hopefully you'll watch it for yourself. But this relates to whether or not this was a political trial, which feels like the most obvious question in the room, but let's prove it. If we're going to say that it was political, let's prove it. The judge had made a donation to the Biden-Harris campaign, which is irregular, not usually done, but we're still going with this judge. His daughter did represent the Biden-Harris campaign in her public relations firm, still does. So she will benefit from the outcome of this trial, which will hurt her client's opponent. This too is possibly a serious conflict, and yet it has been allowed to continue. And he says, if you're going to charge a former president, you better bring the goods and not play this cagey game with compromised actors.
Because going after criminally a former president of the United States and somebody who is running for president now, that's a very bad look for this country. It's an especially bad look when the folks bringing the case and the judge deciding it are members of the opposing political party. And it's an even worse look when the crime is so unclear that the state is hiding the ball about what the actual charges are right up through the trial and indeed into the trial. And even now, we don't know exactly what the jury found Trump guilty of. If you're going to go after a former president and somebody who's running for president now, the poll leading candidate, if you're a member of the other party and you're going to do that, you better have the goods. You better not be pursuing some novel legal theory where you have to hide the ball. It's not even clear what the charges are. That could be a very dangerous precedent for this country, a very bad and dangerous precedent.
But we're here.
But we are here.
That's what's happening. And nobody is saying, hey, you know, we can't charge Trump with something fuzzy. It's got to be solid. You got to be able to hold on to it. And it happened. And that's what we've got. Now, in the episode that was just uploaded today, he talks about how it is very hard to prove that it is a political prosecution unless there is a similar case that was not prosecuted. This is called selective prosecution. And here he gives a very good example of how you prove that one party was prosecuted based on political motivation and one party wasn't. For instance, this.
Give you an example of a comparator like that. This comes out of a case from the District of Columbia not long ago. It's the summer of 2020. A small group of pro-life protesters stage a protest, and as part of their protest, they chalk up a bunch of sidewalks, city sidewalks, with their message, pre-born lives matter, or something like that. Pre-born lives matter. They put it in chalk on a sidewalk and they get arrested. What did they get arrested for? Defacing public property. They're arrested under the District of Columbia's defacement ordinance. And guess what? Under that ordinance, they are probably guilty of defacing public property. But the defendants, they said, hang on a second, just down the street, this is summer of 2020, remember, they said down the street and throughout the city, there are much bigger protests going on and people are chalking up sidewalks and chalking up streets and buildings with the message, Black Lives Matter. It's happening all over the city and nobody ever prosecuted them, not one single prosecution for defacement of public property, but you're coming after us and you're charging us with defacement of public property? And the District of Columbia Circuit, in a decision from just last year, they said, now that's a comparator. With that allegation, if you can prove that, you've just stated a good selective prosecution claim.
Okay, well, guess what? We do have a comparative case. In a case just like this hush money trial.
Dun, dun, dun.
Guess who it is? It's the Hillary Clinton campaign. Watch.
Well, amazingly, there might be a comparator like that in this Trump case. I couldn't believe it when I first read about it, but let me explain it to you. It involves Hillary Clinton. You got to remember the core of the case against Trump. What's the core of the case? Prosecution says Trump falsified business records. How? Well, he took some campaign finance expenses. That's $130,000 in hush money paid to Stormy Daniels. The state says those were campaign expenses, but the Trump organization called them legal expenses. And that was false. That's what the prosecution says. That was false. They were campaign expenses, not legal expenses. And because they were campaign expenses, but not reported as such, that's a campaign finance violation. So that was the heart and remained the heart throughout the case of the prosecution's case against Trump. Now, here's what's so amazing. In 2022, just a couple years ago, the Federal Election Commission determined that the Hillary Clinton campaign had committed a campaign finance violation. What was it? They found that in 2016, the very same year that these events concerning Trump took place, that the Clinton campaign had paid money to fund the Steele dossier. Do you remember the Steele dossier? It was a report containing very scandalous and supposedly incriminating allegations against then-candidate Trump. Well, we didn't know it at the time, but it turns out that the Steele dossier had been funded by the Clinton campaign. And when it was discovered that the Clinton campaign had funded the Steele dossier, the Federal Election Commission started looking, well, how did you report those payments? And it turned out that the Clinton campaign had reported them as legal expenses. That's right, as legal expenses. And the FEC said, those weren't legal expenses. Those were campaign finance expenses. And that violates campaign finance law. You can't call campaign expenses legal expenses without reporting them. Well, that's a surprisingly similar set of facts. But here's the thing. They were never prosecuted by the New York District Attorneys. And of course, the Clinton campaign was located, headquartered, in New York City. So they could have been. And these facts had all come out by 2022. According to public records, there was never a single prosecution, not of Hillary Clinton, not of anybody associated with her campaign, for falsifying business records to cover up a campaign finance violation, notwithstanding the fact that you got, on the surface of it at least, very similar facts.
Okay. I mean, you guys. That to me is a mic drop. That's where we're
this
here.
This guy is a Yale professor. I hope he doesn't get canceled because he's, I mean, aren't they kind of, you know, a little woke in those colleges?
I also had the same thought, like, whoa, this guy's so irrational. He's saying truth. Is that allowed? How is this happening? This is, again, he's calling it straight down the middle. That's exactly how he's playing it. And this is, again, not about what we like, whether we like Trump or not. It is about, is the Constitution being violated? Do we have selective prosecution? We do. One group gets a prosecution, the other gets a slap on a wrist and an $8,000 fine. That's not the same.
Dread in our chat says, dig in this lawyer guy.
Please. Thank you. I was riveted by it. I shared it with my dad. Anyone who would listen, I was like,
shared
you guys, we gotta elevate this guy.
We were driving, listening to it.
Yeah.
It was really good.
So, okay. Now he says that the judge and the prosecution could be guilty of influencing an election. And by the time this is all litigated, said and done years later, this would cause irreparable harm because, again, you can't unring that bell. To all of us, this would cause harm because the outcome of the election would be decided and could not be undone. And of course, it is having that effect. Swing voters have begun to shy away from Trump. In light of this verdict, this is what Clayton talked about earlier. And again, this is not to defend Trump. This is to defend what is the outcome of this trial that may be a political prosecution and a violation of an American person's rights. But now it seems that the prosecution and the judge, maybe they know that they mucked this up and they want to sort of conduct this show trial, but they want to get out of it before their feet is held to the fire and it's proven that they were compromised. Because on Friday night, Judge Juan Merchan sent this letter to all attorneys involved in the case, alerting them to this weird Facebook post where a guy said, my cousin is a juror and says Trump is getting convicted. Thank you folks for all your hard work. Now, if this is legit, which it doesn't even really seem like it is, later said he was a shit poster, but why would the judge send this letter? Like, it seems to me that even though the post is not legit, it signals that the people in charge who have done this political prosecution maybe want out of it. That's what I think. What do you think, Philip?
Oh yeah, no, I was just you covered it, but the guy that originally posted that the judge was mentioning, that he, that guy came out and was like, I was just shitposting. He's like,
yeah.
And so like it was just trying to get the largest reaction with the least amount of effort.
Right.
And so the guy was like, there's you know, so the guy that posted that said, had come out and said that there's no truth to
yes.
it.
Yes. But it would seem to me that the people involved, like the judge and the prosecutor, maybe just say, like, let's use this as an excuse to get out of it so that we are not then investigated for these compromising decisions, such as not allowing the bill of particulars, not making the jury have a unanimous decision, not prosecuting Hillary Clinton. That was weird.
Allowing experts in to tell the jury even what certain things were with the campaign financing laws and stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
So if it ends here, if they did somehow find a way to get out of it, I do think that the judge and the prosecution should still be investigated, possibly sanctioned for bringing this shadow criminal allegation and denying someone the right to defend themselves. Now, I want to address this before we're done, because I've seen some pundits online saying, well, we should, you know, if this is what we're doing, we're prosecuting people politically, then Republicans should turn around and do that to Democrats. I don't like that. I don't think any prosecution should be politically motivated, period. I don't want to see retaliation. I do think Democrats should be held accountable. I would love to see the Obamas and the Clintons and the Bushes held responsible for all the deaths they caused in the Middle East. Yeah, I want that, but not as retribution. I wanted that before we started this political prosecution. So I don't want to see any of that. So anyway, all this to say, check out Professor Rosenfeld. Share this. Let's elevate this content. Let's not allow this to be suppressed, because I think that it is right. And it is honest, and we need that.